Hey, you want that to go?
Now, some quick takeouts on stories we're following all this week. Let's go to Capitol Hill first. And in the absence of our Washington correspondent, Todd Zwillick, filling in is our friend Julie Mason, the White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Julie, the president is off to New Orleans today. It's his first visit there as president, and the White House is already defending the fact that this is his first visit. Here's Robert Gibbs. Robert Gibbs yesterday said we shouldn't judge anybody on the amount of time they've spent there. Don't judge. Judge what that the administration promised what they're going to do and what they've done. So what is the reaction down in New Orleans? Are they judging?
Yes, they're very judgy about all this. The local paper is very unhappy. They are saying that the president's visit this afternoon lacks substance. That's from the New Orleans Times-Picayune. And the problem is that Obama, as a candidate, promised to make New Orleans recovery a priority of his presidency, and not just New Orleans, but the whole Gulf Coast. Of course, Mississippi is very miffed that he's not even stopping by. They're still in bad shakes, too. So, you know, a bit of a public relations problem for the president. But when you talk to people down there, they do say that there's a lot less red tape than there was during the Bush administration. The Obama administration has released about $1 billion in recovery aid. There's more on the way. So things are happening. It's just not getting the attention, I think, that they had hoped for when Obama was elected.
Without making any excuses for anyone, I could say that, you know, President Obama promised a lot of things when he was a candidate. And is there no empathy for the fact the guy has health care reform and Afghanistan on his plate?
Right. And the economy and all these other
right.
things.
That's the problem
with promises, though. You know, he also promised to tackle immigration reform. He made a lot of promises. But he raised a lot of expectations. And certainly he did that in New Orleans as well. As a candidate, he visited there 5 times. And this is his first time as president. So they definitely feel the effect of his not prioritizing the Gulf Coast.
Julie Mason, White House correspondent for The Washington Examiner. Thanks. We're now going to business with Louise Story. She's a finance reporter for our partners in the New York Times. So, Louise, yesterday we found out a little bit more about the folks making our economic policy, right? We learned about the advisors to Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. What are the details we found out yesterday?
Well, you know, I'm normally based up in New York near Wall Street, and I've been in Washington for a month, but sometimes when I'm walking around down here, I feel like I'm still in New York on Wall Street, because the truth is a lot of people from Wall Street have moved down here to work for the government and advise on what's going on, and that's true in the Treasury Department. What came out yesterday was more information about Geithner's inner circle, and we learned about the pay and the background of Lou Alexander, who was advising him on housing policy. Lou used to be the chief economist at Citigroup. And then he has someone, Mark Patterson, there. His chief of staff was a lobbyist for Goldman Sachs. And Lee Sachs, one of his top advisors, worked for a hedge fund. Gene Sperling, another top advisor, worked part-time for Goldman, but was making in the 6 figures for that and over $2 million overall.
Wasn't this the argument against George Bush's administration that we were allowing the wolves to watch the sheep?
That was certainly an argument. And, you know, Paulson, the former Treasury Secretary, brought in a bunch of advisors from Goldman at the last minute when the financial crisis started. And his argument was you needed people from Wall Street to help us figure out this mess. So, you know, Geithner could make the same argument that we're still in a financial mess and you need people who know how the markets work to get us out of it. The criticism is maybe we need to think outside the box. Maybe we need to step back and not think like Wall Street people. And you have to wonder if these people have what social scientists call a contaminated viewpoint, which is that they think like Wall Street. So how will they question Wall Street? And that's the tension.
And I can't imagine that this is something that the Obama administration really wants to broadcast, is that he has these, you know, Goldman Sachs is not real popular on the streets these days.
They haven't been secretive about it. That said, a lot of these people did not go through Senate confirmation. Geithner appointed them as counselors, which did keep them off of the Hill and off from the public glare that they would have gone through if they had been confirmed. So it's a little bit of a backdoor way in for Wall Street to help advise the government and the administration on where we're going to go now.
And has Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, has he responded to the reports about his counselors, I guess he's calling, not advisors, right? Counselors?
Counselors, right. a spokesman for the Treasury Department did respond and said, you know, we need people who know the markets to help advise us. So there is certainly some truth to that. The question is, how many do you need, and do they have enough out-of-the-box viewpoints in there to argue with these Wall Street veterans?
Okay, Louise Story is a finance reporter for our partners, The New York Times. And to sports again with Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, The Takeaway's sports contributor. Okay, game one is tonight. We're going to see the National League Championship Series starting Los Angeles. It starts in Los Angeles.
Correct.
The Dodgers are playing the Philadelphia Phillies. So what should we be watching for in this game?
Well, we have two lefties going up against each other tonight. Cole Hamels of the defending champion in Phillies is going up against Clayton Kershaw. He's had a little bit of a disappointing season, but Clayton Kershaw has the best ERA out of any of the pitchers on these two teams. In the season series that these two teams played, the Dodgers had the edge. They won 4-3. Most of those games were decided by three runs or fewer. And Clayton Kershaw played in two of those games, and he lost both of those games. So that's an interesting thing for tonight.
Yeah.
There's a couple other things I'm looking at. Jonathan Broxton, who's the closer for the Dodgers, he's opposing batters have .165 batting average against him. So he's become an elite closer, and I think he is the difference maker. Another thing I'm looking at is the bench. The Dodgers also have a really deep bench.
Good hitters.
They have three or four guys that could start for other teams, guys like Juan Pierre, Jim Thome, and people have heard of those names because they both have won World Series before. Another interesting thing is a game changer in Ryan Howard. He's hit 45 home runs since 2006 every year. Ryan Howard for the Phillies is swinging the bat amazingly. So look for at a critical moment in the sixth or seventh inning when Kershaw is still in the game, his curveball is not working so great anymore, his fastball might be a little bit slow, going against Ryan Howard at a critical moment in the game. That's when the Phillies will have to decide, are they going to go to their bullpen, which is not as strong as, I mean, that's when the Dodgers have to decide, are they going to go to their bullpen, which is stronger. And someone like Ryan Howard for the Phillies will be up at bat. If you have him against a weak starter, then he's going to take advantage of them. So it's going to be a tough game and a tough series. I think the Dodgers are going to win in seven.
Okay, so that's a very specific prediction. We're going to have you watching that, Ibrahim. Now, we also have tomorrow coming up with the Yankees and the Angels.
Certainly. The Angels are going to put on John Lackey in New York here to start against CC Sabathia. The Yankees are going to use a three-man rotation, which means they're going to go with three starters instead of a four-starter rotation. Now, there's going to be some nuance in this because the weather's supposed to be bad coming in. So there's a storm coming in. So that's going to affect the game. It's probably going to be like 40 degrees, 30, 40 degrees around game time. So October baseball is really October baseball.
Okay. Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, The Takeaway sports contributor. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Good morning.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.